What if we could reimagine the traditional notion of a high flyer? Hey friends, welcome back. Welcome to the High Flyers podcast, where we do reimagine a high flyer, showcase relatable role models and their journey in work and life to help you achieve your potential, become your best self, and continue to be 1% better every single day. I'm your host, Vidit Agarwal, and let's get started. Welcome to episode 116 and installment 21 in the special Curiosity series, where we showcase a specific company, industry, or topic in short, sharp educational episodes. Today, I'm joined by the co-founders and co-CEOs of Different, the power couple that is Meena Radhakrishnan and Ruan Pereira in their first joint appearance on a podcast. Learn about how they grew up 2,000 kilometers from each other in Zambia without knowing it during their childhood, to only meet on the other side of the world in San Francisco. I asked Meena and Ruan about how they settled on Different during their holidays in 2016 and how their experiences across various companies and industries helped them be credible founders and business leaders. I loved learning about their vision to take care of homes and people in them, their early conversations with property agencies, the biggest misconception about their business model, and managing disagreements, being both business and life partners. This conversation is wide-ranging and we cover a lot. It's now time to explore your curiosity. Please enjoy. Meena Radhakrishnan and Ruan Pereira, Team Different, welcome to the show.
Great to be here.
Thanks so much for having us, Vidit. I think this is the first time we've ever done a podcast together.
I know, I am so excited. This is the first time you're both on camera and on microphone, so this should be interesting. Why don't we start up with some fun facts. Ruan, we'll start with you. Where were you born and where do you live now?
Yeah, so my old country is Sri Lanka. I was born there and then moved to Zambia for about 4 or 5 years before moving to Melbourne, I think in 1986. We currently live in Sydney and very happy to be here.
And Meena, I think you were born somewhere a bit different. Tell us about that.
Yeah, funnily enough, Ruan and I actually both lived in Zambia at the same time. I was born in Zambia, lived there for 10 years, and then I sort of migrated through Canada and the US before heading to Australia. Funnily enough, we lived about 200 kilometers away from each other as children without knowing it.
Oh, wow.
Everyone reckons we were married off, but that wasn't actually the case. So.
Wow, how cool is that? And Ruan, what was your first job?
So my first job, I remember I was a telemarketer for $10 an hour working at a place in Melbourne. I remember they used to time the toilet breaks because everyone hated doing outbound phone calls. And I was selling gym memberships for this job. I lasted about 3-4 months.
And how would you describe your role now, Different?
So Different, co-founder, co-CEO of Different, I'm responsible for growth and all of the corporate functions. That tends to be where I spend the vast majority of my time.
And Meena, what was your first job and what do you do now?
Probably various jobs as a kid. The first one I think I can realistically remember getting paid for on a regular basis was I actually used to be a retail manager in the Cornell store. That's how I put myself through college. And then at Different, obviously, I'm the co-founder and co-CEO with Ruan, and I run product design, engineering, and operations.
And you both mentioned earlier about Zambia and growing up there but not knowing each other. So tell us a story. How did the both of you meet?
So we met in San Francisco. So, our parents, and another funny fact, our parents actually, our dads worked for the same company. In Zambia as well. But we met many years later in our 30s in San Francisco. So I was working at Uber at the time, and one of my early colleagues from Uber happened to be a classmate from Ruan from business school, one of his very close friends. And that's what connected us.
And if you go into your professional store journeys, what I find fascinating is you both worked at a lot of reputable companies. So not just one company, but a number of reputable companies. And Ruan, if we start with you, what was the highlight of out of those experiences? Was there a 6 to 12 month period that you remember fondly that taught you a lot?
I think you always learn in every role. Like I think so prior to this, I was at the SoftBank Vision Fund. I think that was a an amazing place to be. I believe that, you know, I believe that Masar and that team, they really see the future and are willing to make very, very big bets. And I think just sort of seeing the importance of really pushing the chips in and going hard at a particular problem is something that I think I learned a great deal about there. I think at Google, prior to that, I was at Google in Mountain View, working on the global business strategy team. And I think that was really interesting because you're sort of seeing where Google places a lot of its bets as a very, very large company, and how the, you know, how the internet can change, how the internet is changing the face of the world, all over the world. I think one thing that I still remember Larry always talking about was the toothbrush test. It's like, hey, you got to have a product that's like a toothbrush that everyone's going to effectively use. That's how you think can have really massive at Google sort of scale. I think you just meet a bunch of really, really great people, particularly spending a lot of time in San Francisco and in the Valley. And I feel like a lot of those relationships are relationships that will carry for the rest of our lives. Many of those folks are investors in different right now. And I think it's a, you know, I think it's there's something to be said for having a bunch of really good mates that, you know, that you can be, they'll be your mates for the rest of your life.
And Mina, I've heard you talk about your experiences. You've done the 0 to 1 at a few well-known companies now. Out of all you, and you've also worked in banking, is there an experience that taught you the most?
You know, you learn so much from each of these experiences. I think, like, for me, I think one thing that's been a really interesting evolution in my career is just generally that I've gone, like, from very large companies, like every company I've ever progressed to has been smaller and smaller and smaller, at least to the point at which I started. And I think that, like, the biggest thing certainly has prepared me for being a founder was definitely those early days at Uber. You know, it's like, that's a 20-person company. For a long, long time, it was truly a startup. Like, and it's hard for people to believe or think about that now. But there was, like, a period of multiple years where you would say to people, hey, I work at Uber, and people would say, what's Uber? You can't imagine that now, but that, like, that time, something special. And it really teaches you, I think, what it's like to create something from scratch. And, you know, it's different, obviously, being an early employee versus being a founder, but, like, that's a really special experience.
What I find fascinating in both your answers is you've used the word different a number of times now, and I'm sure it's pun unintended, but it's fascinating how the word different is so relevant in career experiences and life experiences in general. I want to fast forward, and we're going to jump around a bit here. I want to fast forward to, I believe it was 2016, is that right, when you were doing a world traveling tour? You were both traveling for a bit?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
To take us inside that period, because again, in my research, I noticed, if I understand correctly, you both had a Google Doc and you were writing down all these business ideas and possibilities for your lives. You'd had some really good career experiences by then. How did you land on different? What was the backstory of Ruin? Do you want to tell us about that?
Yeah, I mean, I'll start with the name, just because you mentioned it. It was funny. I still remember we came up with it. We were in a taxi cab from Bangkok Airport to our hotel. And we're like, well, we figured out that this was the thing that we wanted to build. And we're trying to figure out what to call it. And I think one of the things that I personally really believe is that, like, a sales agent is as much a psychologist as they are a transaction facilitator. And so, you know, and I think that, like, at the end of the day, I think, you know, tech can help a lot when it comes to sort of the process of property management. There's a lot more that, I think tech has a hell of a lot of value to add, but I don't think tech will ever replace sort of that core human element that's just so critical to the sales process. By the way, there's a core human element that's important to the property management process too, and we don't seek to move away from that. But that said, we wanted to focus the business on property management. So we were looking for words that had the word rent in them, and it was either going to be transparent or different. And we sort of figured out, hey, different works, and then we tried to see if we get the domain, and we got it. Then we paid $5,000 for that domain.
$5,000?
Yeah, it's not a bad deal, right, for different.com today.
Yeah, it's a shame we can't get different.com.
Still working on
that. So you had the name, and then did you always know that you wanted to build a business together?
That was definitely the intention coming into this. So, like, we got married at the beginning of 2016, and kind of even actually, like, we got engaged about a year before that. And part of that was like, hey, we should do something together. And I think the good thing is that we're good at different things because we're both quite strongly opinionated people. And if we were good at the same things, like, we definitely have our, like, points of difference. But if we were good at the same things, I think we'd have even more of them. And so, like, you know, I look at a financial model and my eyes glaze over and Ron can build them in his sleep, you know? And so I think it's like, it's a good balance of what's there. And we've been thinking about it for a long time before we got married, and then after we got married, we really committed to it.
And you mentioned earlier that, Mina, you manage sort of the engineering, design, ops, and Rowan, you're on the sales, marketing, finance side of things. Did you always establish that those clear boundaries in the early days, or was that through trial and error?
I think it was obvious, didn't it? Like, I mean, just given what we did before, right? Like, I mean, I was a management consultant, I'm an MBA, and I was in strategy, then I was working for one of the, you know, a very large internet investor. Mina's, you know, led product at Uber and the like. And so it just sort of made, it was just, we knew, you know, it felt, I don't think we ever really had an explicit discussion. It just sort of felt like the right thing. What do you reckon, Mina? Like,
yeah, I mean, I think it's pretty clear, like, both what we wanted to do and what we thought we would be good at. And so I think it naturally kind of split itself off.
And take us inside, I believe it was October 2017 was the birth of Different. Now, as you both know better than most, a lot of people have great ideas and they talk about it on holidays and Google Docs, but converting that into reality is the challenging part for many people in this world. What were those first 6, 12, 18 months like? How did you turn this idea into reality? Any memories that stand out?
Yeah, I think one thing I'll say is, you know, that we raised our first capital in October 2017. We hired our first engineers at the very beginning of 2017. You know, like, for me, Sri Lanka is the old country, and it's sort of, Sri Lanka is mum, Australia is dad,
yeah.
Sort of on a personal level. I remember, you know, we moved here. We also then went to Sri Lanka and we just hired engineers, started building stuff. We said, okay, we need to build out our MVP in order to take this forward. And then, so we did that as a first step. I think when we did our first round, we did it off the back of a PowerPoint and a very simple MVP. I think we had like two of our cousins as our customers raised our first million, $1.25 million, I think, from Airtree and a bunch of other investors. That we met along the way.
You know, just to add on that, like we launched officially in October 2017, but we really been working on it for a full year before that. Like I remember, like somewhere in you know, it's thrown away now, but like we have the original like hotel stationery sketches of like, hey, how's this gonna work, and what do the wireframes look like, and then actually putting that into it. And I think some of the hardest things about just taking an idea and turning it into reality is just doing it, right? Because for a lot of people, when that happens, you have a job and you have to actively walk away from something and come into it. For us, the way that we had really kind of actively, I think, set up our lives is that we quit our jobs, we sold our houses, we put everything we owned in storage, and then we really had nothing. Like, what else were we going to do? So it was the way, I think, in which we had set up our lifestyle to be able to get to a place of entrepreneurship is what allowed us to ultimately get there. Because the hardest thing is just getting started, just doing it.
I think that point about bootstrapping initially is an interesting one, and I want to put a pin and come back to that. But I noticed on your website you describe Different as property management as a service for real estate agencies. If you go back again to 2017, what was the overarching sort of problem that you felt Different could solve?
Rowan, do you want to take that one?
Go ahead, Mina.
Okay. So I think the biggest thing for us is when we think about like our vision and how we see Different, it's we want to take care of homes and the people in them. And it's funny because when you think about the word like taking care, it sort of naturally implies something qualitative. But the way that we really thought about it is actually the best way to like take care of homes is to actually deeply understand them, like at a really like strong level of data. And so, for example, to answer questions like, oh, my dishwasher is not working, like, who's the best person to come in and fix this dishwasher? It's not, oh, yeah, like my friend over there, he knows who it is. It's actually, oh, you know, here's this person over here who has done 27 dishwasher jobs in this postcode, and here's the distribution of price, and here's how quickly they came and how fast it, you know, got to a place where they could do it. And we realized that in, you know, when you think about taking care of homes and the people in them, that concept of caretaker, it exists. It exists in the world today. But primarily for investment properties in the form of a property manager. And we thought like, hey, if we can do this really well, if we can do this property management caretaker job for investment properties, why couldn't we use that to then take care of all homes everywhere? And I think that's always been the vision for Different, is that when you start at a place where you really deeply understand the space that you're in, you can ultimately solve the human problem of caretaking because you have all of the data behind it.
I think what particularly fascinates me in Australia is we've all got a connection to property in some format, given how important property is to Australia's economy in general. Yeah. So one could almost say when you hear that is, oh, getting customers, it could be easier than other industries where you've got to educate the market first. But so Rowan, if you put on your sales and marketing cap, what was that? What were those early conversations like with your prospective customers?
You know, it's funny. Like, I go back to this very first, pitch deck. We always knew we would move into a B2B model, right? And we always knew that that was the path for the business. The challenge, though, is like you have a business strategy. You also got to manage your fundraising strategy as well, and you've got to manage your growth strategy in order to achieve that business strategy. We knew that you can't, frankly, you know, forget about the strategy, just the right thing to do. I don't want to ask an agency principal to trust us with hundreds of their properties or thousands of their properties unless we can convincingly show that we're able to manage, you know, thousands of owners and tenants ourselves. I think that's a very key piece. And so we needed to prove that not just to our customers, but also to ourselves. But we also had to grow very, very quickly. So in order to do that, you know, I think we did a lot of research to understand, hey, there's a real opportunity here. We believe that the right blend of full stack tech and full stack operations really seamlessly integrated together is the way to achieve that opportunity. Building this business is very hard because this is a real business, right? We have a real moat. At the end of the day, the moat in this business is optimizing hundreds and hundreds of processes, and for every single one of them, understanding all the different happy paths, unhappy paths, escalations, linking them to tech, understanding the interplay with each other, and being able to do that at scale. It builds a very, very real moat, but you do that by managing many, many, many properties. So we had to get our early properties. I think by starting with a low price and the model being full service for a lower price, you know, allowed us to achieve the growth rates we needed to be able to convince the venture community that this is a bet worth taking. And so I feel like the conversations initially were somewhat price-led to some degree, but showing that we could provide full service alongside. It's really interesting though, isn't it, right? As you scale a business and grow, you have to make big swings. You know, so one of those swings was, hey, we put the price up 43%. We said, you know, a few years later, and we said, again, that's a big swing. Okay, let's go do that. And we did that. We then, you know, at the beginning of this year, we turned off our growth marketing to focus solely on different for agencies. You have to take these big decisions at the right time in order to really take the business over to the next level. And so we've had a couple of those, but it started price-led, moved to service-led, and then moved the business model altogether.
And in the 5 years now, if you look back on 2017, was there a period where you knew that this could be a large business? Mina, was there a inflection point where you sat down and you saw the data or you saw the momentum and you could sense that there is a big opportunity here that different can be large?
Yeah, I think we've always had the idea that it could be, right? Because I do think that once you go down the path of venture funding, that does need to be a big part of the way that you think about businesses. Now, I'm not saying by any means that venture is always the best way for businesses to grow. But if you do choose to make a conscious decision to take venture funding, I think you have to have belief that you can grow a very large business, because that's the expectation of building that. And I think we believe that from the very beginning in terms of the, you know, I think sometimes when people raise seed rounds, they have these ridiculous TAMs about what they could be, you know, like many, many billions of dollars. And I do think, though, that when it comes to things like home is a huge part of what people spend their money on. It's typically like their most valuable asset. And so we'd always seen this as a big market to push into. And I think that there are sort of two key inflection points. One is like, I think with the Series A, we had like phenomenal growth going into it. And then I think we pivoted our growth strategy earlier this year, and the result of that and the uptake has been phenomenal. And so when we think about kind of those two points, like moving from first, like even just like getting to a place where like we actually had like a really viable consumer business and then evolving that consumer business into a B2B business. I think those are the two, for me, big inflection points of the business and how we've enabled faster growth.
And Mina, people listening to this might be wondering, what does a business model look like when you're working with property agencies? Can you put some color to that?
Yeah, I think Bruin's probably better to answer this one.
I mean, the proposition to an agency principal is, focus on your rent roll growth. We'll manage all aspects of the rent roll. I think What is unique about Different is that we have full stack tech and full stack operations, and we have them linked together. Why that I think is really powerful is because it means that we can customize our experience for all three of our customers, being tenants, owners, and the agency principals. And I think that that's a very unique advantage and very difficult to replicate, because for one to replicate that, they need to have built out all of the technology, they need to have built out the full stack operations, they need to tie them together, they need to manage many thousands of properties. And so, you know, it's an opportunity. I think it's you know, like, you can always have fast revenue selling $100 bills for $90, right? Anyone can do that. But if you want to build a really valuable, real business over time, you need to have something that is a real moat and something that's harder for folks to be able to replicate. And I think that leveraging what's uniquely strong about Different and structuring your business to really take advantage of those points of differentiation is the path to building a really great business. And that's why we're taking the approach we've taken. To an agency principal, what does that mean? It means, hey, you know, we leave you with a margin that you'd be very, very happy with if you were running this business yourself. We can run at a lower cost. We can run at a lower cost with better service due to the investments we've made in scale. I mean, the business has raised, you know, north of $40 million to this point. You know, a huge investment into product technology. We have a 50-plus person technology team. We've been working on this for 5 years now. So, you know, they know that their owners and tenants are going to get a better experience, and they're going to make more money than they, as much or more money than they were making doing it themselves. And so that's the proposition to them. And we also, you know, one other piece I think that is very important for a lot of property agents is, hey, what happens to my team members? And I think one of the things that's great is, you know, we will bring, you know, the high performing, like, strong team members from those businesses join Different, and when they join, they have a career path here as well, because the company's like north of 200 people now too. And so there's a lot of growth and development opportunities that folks get that they wouldn't otherwise get, say, in a local traditional agency in a typical suburb. And and the final thing from that proposition when it comes for team members is Their opportunities beyond Different are now no longer limited just to real estate. The whole world of tech is now opened up to these folks. And so, you know, people can grow both within the organization. They can also grow outside of the organization as their, based on what works for them.
I feel like there's two themes there on what you just talked about, Ruan. One is the people side around building Different, the company. And the other is, maybe what are some of the unknowns about Different that you feel 5 years on now that people don't fully understand? And question to both of you, we start with the second one there. Is there one thing that you feel people don't fully understand about Different when it comes to the market or the opportunity?
I think probably the biggest piece of it is it's kind of similar to Uber in some ways. I think like there's a huge technology element to it, but there's also a huge logistics operation to it. And I think it's very true at Different as well, in terms of the thinking about like the nuance of managing like a dishwasher repair or a broken tap. It's not just like, oh, just send somebody out and get it fixed. There's so much that goes into it and so much that comes out of it. And then there's the management of the data pieces. There's like consumer apps so that people can track it. There's apps for suppliers and tradespeople so that they can manage it, and all of those pieces. Like the idea of being able to use technology and people to solve a problem in the home is really complex, and I think that can be an incredibly challenging thing to build. And for us, I do think that there's a book called The Hard Thing About Hard Things, right? I always think actually like our job is like to focus on the hard thing about easy things. From the perspective of a consumer, it should feel really easy. Nobody should be sitting there thinking about all the stuff that goes on behind the scenes. We need to be thinking about that, but from the perspective of a consumer, it needs to be easy. But in order to make that happen, there's all this stuff that you really have to build out. And I think that people don't always see that part of Different, that it's like there's this huge logistics operation and a huge technology operation. Those are the two biggest teams in our company.
I want to go back to something, Ruan, you mentioned earlier about your team. I did notice on LinkedIn you've got 215 employees to be exact. That's quite a big team, and I believe it's across Australia and also Sri Lanka. And people might look at both of you and go, you've got such strong experiences as founders. And I'd say if you look at the Australian landscape, you've probably got some really good strong experiences compared to some of the younger founders who've maybe come with an idea and they're out of uni or they've worked for a couple of years. How have you, and I know you've intentionally built a really strong leadership team and a broader team. If you again go back to the early days, the first couple of years as you were expanding the team beyond yourselves and your close sort of confidants, How did you establish what skill sets you needed to build a business? Because I think that's something founders, and Mina, I know you mentor a lot of founders now, that's something founders really struggle with, where they don't quite know who to hire, and they bring on maybe their friends, or they bring on someone who has a nice logo on their resume, but they don't always turn out well for the business. Yeah. So how did you work out who to hire, given all the experiences you had?
To be honest, I'm making a lot of mistakes. Yeah. I mean, we make hundreds of mistakes, right? I mean, what are some of the classic mistakes? I mean, you've outlined some of them. Another one is you have too many consultants, can be an issue as well. You want to have good, like, people that are, you need to have a certain number of consultants, because I think they add a hell of a lot to the table. But if you have too many, that can be a challenge. And I'm just speaking as a former management consultant, I can say that. But hey, but it's a great brand name. And so you think that, you're trying to hire people that look like you. That's not necessarily the right thing, because at the end of the day, we all have our own strengths and weaknesses. Another mistake is trying to think about hiring someone that's going to be great in 2 or 3 years versus picking up people that are going to be right for the next sort of 12 to 18 months. But importantly, you should always, I think it's very, very important to always fully expect that people will grow in their roles and be able to take on new opportunities. And one of the great things about being in a growing company is that new opportunities present themselves for team members. And I think that's a great thing. Some of the other mistakes that one can make, I mean, I think another piece here is that also just recognizing that, hey, people and companies both grow, but they don't always grow in the same direction. And I think it is important to be able to have that sort of transparency and trust with your team members, to ensure that there is an understanding that the role that they may have in 3 months or in 6 months or in 12 months will be very different to the role that they play now. And I think the last piece of it that I think is important is having fair-minded equity terms. I think a lot of folks you join a startup to learn, not necessarily to earn. But I do think that as you grow the company and build more proof points and get through more rounds, the caliber of talent that one can attract continues to increase. And the best folks understand that, that equity is the most important piece. And if you have good, fair equity, you don't want to be in a situation, for example, where you've locked down the equity program in such a way that folks are forced to stay there when they don't want to be there, because it can create massive impacts on culture. One of the big mistakes I made, I remember, is I took too long to focus on culture. I feel like, when I think we should have hired our first head of PNC, hiring is just buy and buy. It's how you, as a founder, think. Every problem in this business is at least partly of me or in my own making. That's just the nature of any business, being the founder of any company. But I think, one of the mistakes that we made is, hey, we should have really focused on this perhaps 6 months prior to the time that we did, and that hurt us while we were scaling the company rapidly. I'm very happy with, our employee engagement is awesome. We've got great, happy people here. But, if you're slow to do these things, you take on debt, you've got to pay that back with interest over time. We had to navigate. One of the things that we had to navigate at an earlier stage in the life of the company as well.
Great points, and thanks for being so candid. I think the point that I find fascinating, and you, Ruan, you touched on it earlier, is the having operations in Australia and Sri Lanka. And I have in my research noticed that you've got some people where they're based in Sri Lanka, but they manage people in Australia, or people based in Australia, they manage people in Sri Lanka. And I've never lived or worked in Sri Lanka, but I imagine there's a cultural adjustment there in terms of working with people from an Australian context. Is there anything there that you've learned as founders and as business leaders about how to build that cultural harmony?
Yeah, I think we will all benefit from growing out of this mindset that somehow that we can only have people in the West being managed by people in the West. People should be managed by the people who are best suited to manage them, regardless of where they live. And I think that the reality is, as an immigrant, very proud Australian, and also very proud former Sri Lankan. We want to create we want to create great opportunities for people in both of these nations that I love. I'm speaking for myself. And our country head in Sri Lanka graduated from Oxford. He's, you know, incredibly accomplished. He would, you know, he's a, you know, highly respected and very strong team member of our executive leadership team. We've got our entire engineering team in Australia reports to our VP of engineering in Sri Lanka, who's incredibly accomplished, incredibly experienced. I mean, if you take a mindset of running a global team in a meritocracy, we will be able to attract the best people in both geographies, both Australia and in Sri Lanka. And I think that that's a core aspect of ensuring that the company works really effectively cross-border. And I think that's one thing that we have done well. I mean, there's always room for improvement, but it's one of the things that I'm really proud of, is that I feel like in this company, it doesn't really matter where you live.
It's a beautiful thing, and I think it's very rare, to your point, particularly an Australian startup, to have that level of connection with another country and culture. So I'm excited to see where that goes. Mina, I'd love to bring the conversation back to both of you. And I think what I find fascinating as well is your working relationship. You touched on it at the top around how you both got strong personalities. But I also know you're very aligned and you work together really well. What do you disagree on? If I can ask you, how do you manage disagreements and what do you tend to disagree on?
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, like anything, I think we're all still a work in progress. I would say that I think where we tend to disagree, it's the nature of, I think, our personalities, where I think Rowan's I have much more of a bias towards just let's do it and we'll figure out the rest along the way. And then I think Rowan is more cautious about certain things. And that's not to say that either one of those paths is better than the other. It's that you use the right things in different situations, you know? There's some things where you need to have that level of care before you jump into it. And there's other things where you just have to go do it and you'll figure it out along the way. And so I think that's where we tend to have sort of the biggest sort of disagreements of, like, that's what's the right approach in these ways. And the good thing, I think, and what makes us effective as co-founders is the level of trust. You know, it's like we're going to home together at the end of the day and take care of two young kids. So we need to figure out a way to make it work, even if we argue, which we absolutely do. We have no compunction. Our executive team, anyone in the company, will tell you about disagreeing with each other. And I think we try to not make it personal. We try to make it very much about the issue.
You know, it's funny. Like, people say, oh, well, if you're being a married couple, does it make the company more likely to fail? The reality is a lot of single CEOs fail as well, right? So, I mean, I think at the end of the day, if to the extent that Mina and I can work effectively together, it's an important caveat, right? Because we have to be, as if you're running as co-CEOs, you have to be able to work really effectively together. It's a massive net positive because we have complementary skill sets, and also we can be in two places at the same time, which is really powerful. Where it breaks down is if we are misaligned, and I think that's a really important piece, because if you're misaligned and if we're regularly misaligned. We're not able to have open conversations and, frankly, open disagreements with each other and with our executive team, then folks will forum shop and create a whole raft of issues. So it is important to be really aligned on the big things. I think the last thing I'll say about it is that, you know, the CEOs are obviously key to the business, but you also have a very, very strong executive team. I'm incredibly proud of the executive team we've pulled together. I think it's a fantastic team, and they're all, frankly, you know, at least in my case, better at what they do than I would be at whatever they are doing. So, you know, we look to them to be making a lot of decisions. And also we have a board above us that we look to be making decisions that we go to. And I think that, you know, it's all three of those groups are pivotal, frankly, as well as our broader different leadership group. You know, those are how decisions get made, particularly as companies scale. And so, you know, it seems to work for us, at least so far.
And talk to how you differentiate between the business partners and life partners. One of the things I noticed in my research prior to this that Mina, you talked about in another podcast, is you had your first kid during the Series A raise, and I think you had your second during the Series B raise. I don't know if you have any more kids planned for the future series raises, but for those two kids. So. But tell us about that. Like, one could almost, back to perception, say that, yeah, how do you go for breakfast in the weekend and not talk about different? How do you just talk about life and talk about the kids' schooling or talk about a holiday? How do you balance that? Do you have clear boundaries where you go, Sunday night, we're going to watch a movie and just switch off and go get food and not talk about the business? Or is it built in and you've got to just manage that every day?
Oh, no, I don't think we're always very good at it. Like, there's a constant struggle to be like, no, we are not talking about different right now. I think for me, like, Rue and I have different approaches to how we do it. Like, I'm quite strict and compartmentalized about my time. I'm like, this is work time, and this is family time, and this is me time. And, like, I won't think about anything else. And I'm pretty good, I think, at being, like, strict about those boundaries. But that's kind of the way that I work. I don't think Rue is always like that. You know, we have our little, like, rituals. Like, Wednesday night is always, like, a date night for us. We make dinner together, and we do stuff, and we try not to talk about work, put a TV show on that we want to watch, or whatever it happens to be. So we have these little things that we try to find, but like everything, it's a constant work in progress. And it's hard because work is such a huge component of our lives, right? Not just in the sense that work typically is, but also because like we're the co-founders and co-CEOs of this growing business that is 200 people. And that's a big thing. And so it does take a lot of mind space, and it's a constant balancing effort to say, okay, now I'm going to put that aside and I'm going to be this person.
Yeah, I don't think I've mastered it yet. I think it's hard. I think it's something that we work on, and I think it's something that I need to do a better job on personally.
We're coming to a close, so I'd love to get a final word from each of you. Is there anything I haven't asked you about your stories or about different that you want to share with our listeners? Rowan, if we start with you.
Probably management's freaking hard. I think that the... it's funny. It's like you... It takes a certain level of naivety, I think, to be a founder. You don't want to have too much naivety, but you should have enough. I think we have built a great moat, but I think it is filled with tears.
Mina, anything you want to add to that?
I think there are so many moments as a founder where you're like, oh my God, what am I doing? How do I get through this? Where do I go? And so much of it, I think, is just remembering. Remember, you started on this journey. That in itself is meaningful. That's a big path. And it's sometimes everyone, no matter how successful their company is, has these moments of like, oh my God, what is going on? And you just need to get through those, you know? And I think that's the biggest thing is like the resilience, the grit. Like, I think it's the belief in yourself that you started this, you can keep going. And there's a point where that stops being true. And just really ask yourself the question, you know, as you're going through it. But like, I think have that faith, have that confidence. It's going to work out.
I was going to say that was the last point. But Rowan, as you mentioned that comment about pain and tears, are there any differences when it comes to Australian cities in property management? This is a very random question, but I'm curious. Are there any nuances that you've noticed between property agencies or property culture when it comes to different cities in Australia?
There are nuances in it around how, you know, the prices that people charge and the like. But I think at the end of the day, the most important thing is the individual people that we are dealing with. And I think, you know, you deal with people of all stripes all over the world and every city that we service.
Well, that's the finish line. Mina, Rowan, thank you so much for joining me. Super excited for what's ahead for you and wish you all the best.
Thanks so much for having us with it. See you.
Cheers. See you. Bye.
I hope you've taken away some valuable insights from this conversation to apply to your lives and continue to be 1% better every day. And stay tuned for the next episode in this Curiosity series where we take you inside another topic, company, or industry.